Where is it?
George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Samuel Adams, First Chief Justice John Jay. Names synonymous with the spirit of our country, founding fathers of the USA. Over 200 years ago, they shook off the chains of tyranny from Great Britain by divine call. Citing 27 biblical violations, they wrote the Declaration of Independence with liberty and justice for all. But something happened since Jefferson called the Bible the cornerstone for American liberty that put it in our schools as a light. Or since Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death, Patrick Henry said, our country was founded on the gospel of Jesus Christ. We eliminated God from the equation of American life, thus eliminating the reason this nation first began. From beyond the grave were the voices of our founding fathers plead, you need God in America again. Of the 55 men who formed the Constitution, 52 were active members of their church. Founding fathers like Noah Webster, who wrote the first dictionary, could literally quote the Bible chapter and verse. James Madison said, we stake our future in our ability to follow the Ten Commandments with all our heart. These men believed you couldn't even call yourself an American if you subvert the word of God. In his farewell address, Washington said, we can't have national morality apart from religious principles. It is true. Because right now we have nearly 150,000 kids carrying guns to these war zones we call public schools. In the 40s and 50s, student problems were chewing gum and talking. In the 90s, rape and murder were on the trend. The only way this nation can even hope to last this decade is for God in America.
Out of the world, you must be a slave, because the call that you want.
Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening one of my favorite guests. Her name is Deborah Ray, and she's written a fascinating book entitled The ABCs of Globalism. Deborah, thank you so much for being with us again.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, Dr. Stan.
And, of course, you're up from the Washington area, aren't you? Pretty in Washington itself?
That's right, in Seattle.
All right, fine. Well, this program is heard certainly east of the Cascades there in the Spokane area there, Walla Walla. Certainly Wenatchee, Tri-Cities, unfortunately it doesn't get there into the Seattle region, so we do have one program there that's just on Saturday, so under any circumstances, it's good to have you with us, and of course, Deborah has written a book called The ABCs of Globalism. So why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about how you happened to write the book and of course, why you think that this is really an important contribution. I think it's an important contribution. I think it's a book that's just so handy to have. But why don't you go into the background of who you are and how you happen to write a book on, of all things, globalism?
Yes. My background, Dr. Stan, is in education, and so I have tended to be a researcher by nature. And my passion has always been the Bible, the Word of God. And what I've done is try to pair the geopolitical events of the day, the religious trends, the trends in science and education and health, et cetera, with the scriptures and what they have to say about these end times or latter days. And in developing these concepts, I've put them into an alphabetical listing with the history and background of trends and movements, people, organizations, all pointing to globalism. And then I paired it with a Bible emphasis. And I think that that's what makes the book so important, because we need to know what God thinks about these things in order to keep our bearings.
Well, you know, one of the things is that most Christians today don't understand the relationship between the Word of God and the talk of this coming time of end times and what's happening today. I sometimes think that there's almost a schizophrenia there. Certainly, us going into a war, if we're going into a war in the Middle East, our leaders are talking about how important the United Nations is, and certainly we've heard a lot of talk about a new world order from past administrations, and even many of the people surrounding President Bush. We know that Gary Hart had given a talk, certainly just three days after the 9/11 attack, talking about, there is a chance that the President of the United States can use this disaster to create what his father talked about, a new world order. But the new world order is really this globalism that you're talking about, isn't it?
Exactly, and there are so many terms that are being thrown around: the global village, sustainable society, agrarian society. All of these point to one and the same, globalism.
And of course, what's the significance of this move towards world government as you see it from a biblical point of view?
Well, the Bible makes it very clear that there's a time when, in the bogus name of peace, there will come to pass a one-world government with a totalitarian nature and a nature worship component. And it speaks specifically in the 17th chapter of Revelation of nations coming together into one mind, promoting what it claims to be the universal good. And there's a heightened sense of human potential, moral relativism, calling light darkness and darkness light, and a growing animosity against Christians with false gurus of Christhood coming up instead to deceive those even who are the very elect of God.
And, of course, we see these false gurus, the Reverend Moons and so many of the other people who really claim divine divinity, some of the Indian gurus who claim that they are simply the living manifestations of God. But, of course, I think people, a lot of people, have a very difficult time correlating what we read in the paper every day about the United Nations and about the very new international court and the certainly the trials that have been held in The Hague recently, and then the move towards the International Criminal Court, and then, of course, the call for a global tax and a global army, and, of course, the debates that are going now on in the United Nations Parliament, because it really is a parliament, you know, as to whether the United Nations should or should not attack Iraq. And then, of course, carrying that over into the biblical connotation and suggesting that these really are the times that are talked about in the Scriptures.
Yes, it's an amazing correlation, and I must say it is quite complex on one hand, but on the other hand, as you dig deeply into these truths and understandings, you see parallel threads, you see concepts and belief systems and terminology that repeats itself in each one of these arenas. And the important thing is to know that these words don't necessarily mean what we presume them to mean. There are specious terms that are being used by the globalists that sound very appealing, but in fact the agenda behind these terms are counterproductive to our well-being as Americans and especially as Christians.
Well, you know, I think that it's very hard for most people to really believe that it's not a matter of will there be a world government. There is a world government, and many of the dictates of that world government are being enacted in their local communities. They have a fire board there, and the fire board enacts these various rules and regulations. And well, of course, the average individual doesn't understand that these rules and regulations are being sent down from higher levels, from international to the state, to the federal, to the state level, to the local level. And so your local fire board or water board, or they're all enacting these international regulations that have been set forward by the truly global government that does exist. And, of course, I think one of the most difficult things for people to understand is that there are people of great wealth. I mean, we're talking about, you know, multi-billionaires who are embraced this whole cause of globalism and socialism. I think that it's very difficult for the average individual who's been trained in American schools to understand that so much of the Marxist thought really is backed by people of great wealth. How do we explain that? Certainly, I thought socialism was a redistribution of the wealth.
Yes, well, isn't that curious that the very people, for example, the Maury Strongs, the billionaires, are the ones that are calling for the breakdown and destruction of capitalism and the industrial revolution and all that has brought our society. If you look at the brain of globalism, the Council on Foreign Relations, and its arms of power, you see that in these highly secretive groups are the very wealthy people of the world. For example, the Club of Rome has as its members the Queen of Netherlands, the King and Queen of Spain, Maurice Strong, second in command at the United Nations, and Gorbachev. And you see also in the Trilateral Commission members that are heads of the World Bank and the World Trade Organization, the Chancellor of Germany and Tony Blair, and the last six Secretary Generals of NATO. These people are the money people of the world. They're the shadow government, as it were. They're those that are kings without kingdoms because they rule with the purse.
Kings without kingdoms. I think that's a beautiful phrase, and yet it's really so accurate. And they really do rule. And of course, the one thing about you, whether you talk about the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Club of Rome, or the certainly the Bilderbergers, or the communists, and this is what's so unusual, is that they all have the same goal. Every communist, every socialist, every humanist, and all of these people of great wealth all have the same exact goal, and that is this new world order, and of course with that the new world religion. So all of these organizations are working for exactly the same goal, and that's of course why people of great wealth see nothing wrong at all with working with communism. Of course they can't let the common folks understand that, because they might catch on to the fact that so much of what we believe just ain't so. It isn't at all as we really imagine that it is.
Yes, and it seems that the eventual goal of the power elite then is the synthesis of capitalism and communism into a world socialist government. And of course, socialism is, you could use the analogy of having two cows and you keep one, or you keep one and give one to your neighbors. So there's this distribution of wealth.
But of course, Murray Strong's going to have a whole herd, and he's not going to share them with anybody. That's just a sort of redistribution of our wealth, not of his wealth.
Absolutely. The idea is to redistribute the world's wealth and then to concentrate that wealth into the hands of few who really will control the masses by means of global governance
and that's
international law.
And that's exactly what communism is. I mean, anybody who really believes that there is any redistribution of the wealth in communism is incredibly naive. Of course, communism is simply a power structure with a ruling elite, very similar to what the globalists want, which all of these groups want. But, of course, I think that the one thing that people have missed is the spiritual component behind this. And if we just look at this as a political movement or an ideological movement and ignore the spiritual component, we miss what this is really all about. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree wholeheartedly. The spiritual component is the life spirit, so to speak, of this whole trend toward globalism, and it undergirds it and empowers it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that these people use to pursue their goal. And, of course, they have all these trick phrases which people really don't understand, and causes which really don't make any sense. They don't make any sense unless you understand what really motivates them. So we hear this term sustainable development. What are they talking about when they use this rather glib phrase?
Well, sustainable development, it has kind of a nice sound to it, and certainly something that people would want to see come to pass. But in fact, it is population control and, again, redistributing the world's wealth. And it's not a positive thing for our nation, and it certainly is part of the death culture that would eliminate the undesirables and nurture the cosmic citizens of the world who are politically correct and ecologically enlightened and willing to move along with the whole thrust of the globalist agenda.
Well, you know, of course, we hear a lot about, say, global warming, or we hear about the ozone hole, or we hear about acid rain. We hear about this whole environmental movement. Where does that fit into this whole move towards globalism?
Well, the new paradigm, as defined by Gorbachev, supposedly will come to pass, according to Gorbachev, by the international disaster key of the problem of ecological catastrophe and crisis. It's the cornerstone, as it were, of the new age and the new world order. And Gaia is the goddess of Mother Earth, and it is she who is revered and honored as an interconnected living ecosystem whose delicate nature requires the protection of world government.
And I think this is really point that Deborah is making is so important. You look at all the problems that the environmentalists raise, whether it be global warming or the ozone hole or the acid rain or the endangered species. But of course, the solution to every one of these is a new system of laws. And since, of course, global warming is a global issue, and acid rain certainly goes over many, many boundaries, the solution is not simply federal laws, but international laws. And this is why Gorbachev is so involved in this. Gorbachev, working with Maurice Strong and, of course, Stephen Rockefeller, the son of I believe it's of Nelson Rockefeller. Certainly he is the, will be the heir, leader of this whole Rockefeller clan when David Rockefeller goes to his just rewards. Stephen Rockefeller and Maurice Strong and Gorbachev, the former butcher of Afghanistan, the former head of the Soviet secret police, KGB, the former dictator of Russia, all of these three are working together towards this this global government, this whole using the environment to justify the implementation of really a world authoritarian system will regulate every aspect of human endeavor. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's so funny that their claims are simply not backed by science. For example, a $500 million study conducted by our own government from 1980 to 1990 found that acid rains caused by sulfur dioxide and oxides of nitrogen are not destroying lakes and streams, crops, and vegetables. And there's no evidence of widespread forest damage from current levels of acidic rains in the United States.
And yet, just this last week, one of the questions on Jeopardy was about acid rain. In other words, the answer was acid rain that is, of course, getting onto our trees, and the implication was doing damage. And of course, this is amazing how they can use even something like Jeopardy, a game show, to push this false and faulty agenda that has become the reality of so many misinformed people here in the United States. Global warming is a scam. Certainly the ozone hole was a scam because the patent was running out on Freon, and of course it was a very, very cheap and effective way of maintaining refrigeration, and that's why we had to outlaw it. We wanted more expensive things. It was very good for DuPont, which had the patent on another product. In other words, they no longer could have produced Freon. Anybody could have produced Freon, and that's why they outlawed it, and they just timed that to go with the expiration of the patent. But they were able to sell this all across the world, and then the whole world outlawed Freon, and now we have more expensive products to use. And, of course, with each of these scams that they have, there's always some purpose behind it. Of course, this whole thing on global warming is to actually attack the infrastructure of the Western countries, and specifically the United States, because, of course, we were to ratify the Kyoto Protocol. It would literally destroy our economic base because it would destroy our ability to produce electricity. After all, we can't use nuclear to produce electricity because, after all, these might explode and we'd have another Chernobyl here. What would we do with the waste products? We've got all this waste sitting, in containers all over the country, and they're beginning to rust, and pretty soon we're going to have all this radioactive material going out and polluting our streams and our ground. And because nobody ever asked why we don't just go ahead and reprocess it like every other country does, but of course the answer is we have laws that prevent us from doing it because they don't want a solution, they want a problem. And and it's amazing, Deborah, that how gullible the American people are, without realizing that we could solve any one of the problems that we really face, and yet they always have done something to prevent that because they want really to utilize the environmental issues to regulate the individual and destroy freedom as we've noted in the past. But I think the biggest thing is that the average individual really doesn't understand that the world government today is a reality. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that wholeheartedly, and I think that we have been lulled to sleep by the vocabulary and the concepts and the politically correct terminology that we're being forced to use by guilt and by pressure, peer pressure, and people are so afraid to say anything that would be opposed to this whole trend because it has been so much brought forth through the schools and through the mainstream media, and we're brainwashed.
I think that's really the problem. Well, our telephone number, if you're out there across America listening to us, you have a question or comment, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And so give us a call if you have a question or comment. Oh, our guest this evening is Deborah Ray. Her book, The ABCs of Globalism, and of course, if you'd like to know anything about the book, why, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Do you have a website, Deborah?
Yes, I have a website. It would be DeborahRayBooks.com. DeborahRayBooks.com.
Okay, fine. And of course, have you written any other books besides this one?
Yes, I've got a second book coming out shortly, and it's on cultural isms. It's in similar format, and again, it brings the contrast between Bible truth and the cultural lie.
Well, I hope that you'll get a copy as soon as it's out, and we'll get you on, and we'll talk about that. Now, for our listener out there, the book is called ABCs of Globalism because it's alphabetically arranged, and you can go from A, abortion, all the way to Z. I don't know, what is there any Z's that you have in the book?
There are no Z's, but
no.
Zero population growth, I suppose, could be in
right there. All right, well, and so it's really just such a handy desk reference because you don't have to, go to an index to look things up. Everything is pretty well just laid out in an alphabetical order. And so many of this, the facts go into the background of the people and organizations that are pushing this whole move towards the New World Order, the New World Religion. We call it globalism, but of course, if you look at it very carefully, you realize that this is the one world government that will, of course, bring the Antichrist into the world. So we've got Pamela calling from Aptos. Hi, Pamela. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm well. I really appreciate your program, and you caught me on that hazardous waste comment because I thought, okay, I'm one of those dumbed-down people who believes that, is it ever even possible that it's unhazardous?
Well, let me explain to you what the thing that they have done is that every other country in the world that uses nuclear plants reprocesses the waste material. In other words, and this can be reprocessed and reprocessed again to get all the radioactive material out of it, and then you end up with a very, very little bit, and you put that into glass, and it's not a problem. But you see, if they did that, there wouldn't be the problem. And so, when I first read about that, I thought, how could that possibly be? I read 5 or 6 newspapers every day, and I have all these magazines, stacks of magazines, and it wasn't until I got some books specifically written on this subject, I realized, of course, the logical solution would be to reprocess it. But then we found out that government in its wisdom had passed laws. Now, basically what happened is that early in the 70s or so, a number of corporations put up billions of dollars to build a plant to reprocess nuclear waste material. And then, of course, under the Carter administration, they passed a law outlawing those plants, and these companies lost literally billions of dollars with no recourse. When the Reagan administration came in, they reversed the laws, and they said, well, you can go ahead and build the plants. And, of course, the manufacturer said, you've already fooled us once, and we've lost billions of dollars. We want to guarantee you're not going to pass another stupid bit of legislation. And, of course, a byproduct of this is a certain amount of plutonium. Will you purchase this plutonium from us or allow it to be used in plants one way or the other? We just want to make sure that we're not going to get stuck, left out to dry. And, of course, Congress would not do that. The Reagan administration would not back it up. And so today we do not do what every other country in the world does. And the fact that you didn't know that, Pamela, and you're a well-educated, well-informed individual, simply reflects the degree of control that exists over the media and what the American people think.
Thank you.
Okay,
thanks for that explanation.
Else?
No, okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And, of course, this is the problem that we have today, is that we do not have free access to information in the United States. In fact, I did a program earlier today with Joel Scows, and he was telling a story that Congressman Ron Paul had told him. And they were back in Washington, D.C. Ron Paul, of course, member of Congress, was attending this committee meeting with Congressman Hyde, who most people think is this good, conservative, God-fearing congressman, because he usually champions the cause, the pro-life cause. And Congressman Paul, although he opposes the war, the coming war with Iraq, he had actually put forward a resolution that Congress declare war, because he wanted to see, you know, if Congress had the courage to take a vote on whether or not they were in favor of going into this, what may be very well a genocidal war, genocidal not only for the Iraqi people, but for the American troops we have there. Whereupon the Congressman Hyde said, "We don't declare war anymore. The Constitution, as we've known it, is pretty well archaic, and we don't abide by that at all." And then, of course, the House Minority Leader, I think it was Tom Lantos, echoed that same concept. Well, you know, this was quite a statement for one of the leading four members of Congress to say, you know, we don't believe in the Constitution. So Congressman Paul immediately went to, as soon as the hearing was over, went to C-SPAN, which of course was taking videos of that, and to the Congressional Recording Office. It records everything, and you'd never guess what happened. Both C-SPAN and the Congressional Recording Office had problems electronically, and that one part, those statements made by Congressman Hyde and Tom Lantos, had just disappeared. And, of course, it'll never be seen in the paper because, of course, it was never recorded. And if it was never recorded, it didn't take place. And that's how they control what the American people think. There are people in Congress who don't believe in the Constitution. Tragically, most of our congressmen do not believe in the oath that they've sworn. We have a few good people back there. We need a lot more. And, of course, anybody who would make a statement like that should be impeached and forced out of office. But the problem we have is that the media is there not to reveal but to conceal the truth from the American people. Have you run into this, Deborah?
Absolutely. And, of course, the whole idea is to supplant America's constitutional republic with a social democracy where the U.S. Constitution is no longer applicable, but the U.N. Charter is, in fact, the Bible. And instead of a constitutional republic, they want a democratic transnational government, which has been praised, as you mentioned, by Karl Marx, rather than by our founding fathers. And so there's a great contrast between the two. And the mainstream media not only reports the news, but it also analyzes, interprets, and helps make foreign policy, according to Washington Post Ombudsman Richard Harwood, who did a piece about the role of CFR media members.
That is an amazing, amazing article. Any of our listeners would like to have that. It appeared in October, I think it was 23rd of 1993, in the Washington Post, of all places, where, of course, he simply talked about, you know, how the Council on Foreign Relations people controlled all of the media. I have watched, you know, from the Wall Street Journal to the New York Times to the Washington Post, and made that remark. They don't report the news. They make it happen. They don't report the legislation, they get it passed in this effort. And if you'd like to read that, why, we'd be glad to send you a copy. Just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and we'd be glad to get it to you. And we need you to get informed and help us to get the truth out across America. We'll be right back with Deborah Ray, author of The ABCs of Globalism. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan back here on Radio Liberty, and I just this time I just wanted to announce that even though I know this would not be applicable to our guests and our friends up in the Great Northwest or across the country listening on the Internet, but here in the Santa Cruz, Monterey area where we're broadcasting from, there's going to be an open house on Tuesday, the March 11th at 10 to 11 a.m. At the VHM Christian School. And this, of course, is on 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz between Soquel and Capitola Road. And, of course, this is a great Christian school. My son went there many, many years ago, and I can recommend it to you. They certainly have openings now, in the, not only in their kindergarten, but in many of their other grades. And the children there get an education firmly grounded in the scriptures. And let me recommend the VHM Christian School to you. And, of course, if you'd be interested in going to the new student open house Tuesday, March 11th, from 7 to 8 p.m. in the evening, or the kindergarten on Tuesday, March 11th, from 10 to 11 in the morning. Either go in the morning or go in the evening, but if you have children and you are not able to homeschool them, you need to get them out of the government schools. And let me suggest VHM, an excellent place for an excellent education, and I can speak from personal experience with that. So, again, that's March 11th. If you have any questions, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You might want to just go down and look at it, even if you're not interested in having your children go there. But this is a good school. So anyway, let's get back to our special guest this evening, Deborah Ray. And we're talking about her book, The ABCs of Globalism, and the fact that the global government is here. Now, the American people are not yet ready to give up their freedom. That's why we need another major conflict, another world war. And I believe that world war is coming, and I believe that the current conflict, if you think about this logically, doesn't quite make sense. I mean, here we got into this because there was a terrorist attack on America. 15 Saudi Arabians and four other people, I think one of them from Yemen and one from a couple from Egypt and one from the United Arab Emirates, you know. But 15 Saudi Arabians come into America, hijack our planes, crash them into our buildings. Of course, Osama bin Laden, who supposedly was behind all of this, came from Saudi Arabia. There's no question at all that Saudi Arabia financed the whole Al-Qaeda movement and the terrorist movement. And we know these people had to have a lot of money. You don't simply come over here and live for 6 months simply on the money you have in your piggy bank. There was obviously a nation behind this, funding it, and of course helping these people to get their identification papers. American policy brought them in. Every single one of the people coming from Saudi Arabia, one filled out their immigration papers incorrectly, and they were all allowed to come into the country. And you have to ask yourself why. Well, you know, simply everything pointing towards Saudi Arabia, and yet when the families of the victims of the September 11th attack wanted to sue Saudi Arabia, which would, of course, allow their lawyers to investigate and do depositions. And they wanted to sue a number of princes there for funding the Islamic terrorists. And, of course, our president has said that we're going to find out who's funding these Islamic terrorists and take care of them. But the Bush administration blocked the suit and immediately went to, of course, we went to war with Afghanistan, and now we're going to war with Iraq. And yet, up until what we know as of October 31st of last year, Prince Abdullah of the Royal Saudi family was meeting the leaders of Hamas, who are the people who are doing everything they can to prevent the Oslo Peace Accord, the peace process for working between the Palestinians and the Israelis. So why are we concerned about Iraq when Saudi Arabia seems to be the major funder of this whole Islamic terrorist movement? And, of course, they spent billions of dollars here in the United States pushing this radical Islamic belief. And this is different than the Muslim belief. This is an Islamic belief based upon not only the five tenets of the Muslim faith, but the sixth tenet, which is jihad. And that's the one way you can be sure to get into heaven, is to die killing the infidels, like you and me might be. So, you know, there are a lot of uncertainties about what's going on today, and if you think about it carefully, none of it makes sense unless perhaps this is a prologue or a much larger war. And of course, as we look at this from a biblical point of view, and if we forget about the politics, we forget about the rationale, we forget about what we read in the paper, and we go to God's Word, we get an entirely different view of what's taking place, don't we, Debbie?
Yes, it is quite amazing how the Bible did predict that these are perilous last days. And perilous in the Greek can mean fierce. And these latter days are scarred by unprecedented rumors of wars and global outbreaks of wars, and many of which are racial, ethnos versus ethnos, it says in Matthew 24. And so we're living certainly what God has warned would be typical of the days prior to his coming for his people.
And of course, the other thing is that we're told in the latter days there'll be a tremendous increase in knowledge. And of course, we're seeing this tremendous increase of knowledge. It's just almost eerie when you realize that, certainly in the electronic field, knowledge doubles every 9 months. In fact, what's happening as far as the ability to create a life, as the cloning, these things that the genetic things, altering plants and altering human beings and altering animals by the genetics. This is doubling. Knowledge is doubling almost every 9 months. And I heard a speaker recently say, and he was quoting, of all people, I think it was Woody Allen, and I don't have the exact quotation, but with this tremendous explosion of knowledge, you know, we're suddenly going to be faced with two paths. One is going to be towards death and destruction, and the other path is going to be towards destruction and death, and we just hope we'll have the knowledge to find which path to take. But you know, I although said with tongue-in-cheek, the destruction of civilization is very close at hand, because I don't think God is going to tolerate this continued destruction of this perfect plan he laid out too much longer. What are your thoughts?
Yes, well, I've heard that in the last 30 years, we've generated more data than in the previous 5,000 years prior to that. And when the Bible talks about knowledge, gnosis is the Greek word for it. Epigenosis is used for full knowledge, and this has to do with the things of the Spirit of God. And the knowledge that is generated in the human sphere that is being inspired by the enemy, the spiritual enemy of mankind, is going to produce, no doubt, destruction in the name of peace, in the bogus name of peace.
And of course, so much of this centers around globalism, this whole move towards the New World Order and the New World Religion. And all we hear today on the news is, well, the United Nations is looking into this, and all these countries on the Security Council, gee, are we going to be able to get a vote from the Security Council that will allow us to go to war? Will we ignore the Security Council and go to war on our own? And if we do, what will happen to the United Nations and the bureaucracy? And will this undermine the United Nations? But my fear is we will go to war without the United Nations, of course, approval. A terrible catastrophe will unfold. And, of course, that will then, everybody will say, gee, we should have listened to the United Nations. We've got to have world government. And only when the American people have lost their freedom, when there's been tremendous loss of life and tragedy and horror here, similar to that they've had in Europe on two occasions during the 20th century, will the American people be willing to relinquish their freedom and enter this one world government that, of course, has been prophesied for so long. And, you know, I read certain magazines, publications put out by people who are disciples of Lucifer. One of them is Share magazine, which is, of course, published by Benjamin Krem. And, of course, there, the writings of a man who purports to be the Antichrist says that, you know, everybody's focused on Iraq, but, you know, everybody's focused on the coming war. But, of course, know that you can rest assured that the bureaucrats of the United Nations are working quietly towards the establishment of this one world order. And that's really what it's all about. You know, we, of course, are being drawn away from what's really happening by what's going on in the Middle East. And we do not understand that the march continues towards this one world government, which will, of course, be the government of the coming Antichrist. How do you think we can get the church, the Christians of this country, to understand the relationship between what's happening politically and what's happening spiritually?
Well, our certainly our foundation is in the Word of God, and we know that the Holy Spirit will guide us into all truth. And I think it's very important, first and foremost, to be in relationship with the Lord and to be submitted to Jesus, not only as our personal Savior, but also as Lord of our life. And as we search the Word in honesty and seek truth, and issue error, I think that God will be able to give us the connections that we need to be safe and vigilant, for we are called to be vigilant according to the Word of God. The devil as a roaring lion goeth about seeking whom he may devour. And we don't want to be a tidbit in the mouth of the enemy.
Well, we certainly don't want to be. You know, the real tragedy is today that most of the churches are not talking about this sort of thing. It's disquieting. People don't like to hear that our comfortable life, our life here in this amazing, amazing country, almost utopian as it would be. No, I don't think that any people in recorded time have had the comforts of the scientific advances that we've had, and certainly the material well-being that we have enjoyed here in America. And people don't want to hear that that is ending, that is not going to be the same. And they see, first, the loss of jobs, the economy turning down, certainly more and more people, having difficulty even affording health insurance. It's so expensive. And they somehow think, well, you know, these things will get straightened out somehow. You know, this is just a temporary thing. Everything's going to turn out all right. Without understanding, that's not what it says at all in the scriptures. We're not guaranteed a bed of roses at all, but we're only guaranteed, you know, that he will be with us until the end of time or the end of the world. That, lo, I will be with you until the end of the world, is the end of the book of Matthew. And I think that is the one consolation we have, because I personally believe we're moving into very difficult times, and having studied what's going on for 40 years, I'm more convinced than ever that God's judgment is going to come on this country. What are your thoughts?
I agree wholeheartedly. I think that there is a fluffy religion in many Christian churches that is yippee-skippy, fun, entertainment, God wants to bless me at your expense kind of mentality. And Scripture says that the servant is not greater than the master. And our master, Jesus Christ, was persecuted and suffered in horrific ways. And I think that we too are called to pick up our cross and follow him. And when the Bible says to unbow yourself and look up, for your redemption draws nigh, to have been bowed over presupposes that there will be difficult times and oppression and repression and persecution against the church prior to the parousia or presence of the Lord Jesus Christ for his saints.
And of course in Ephesians we're told, you know, for we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. So wherefore put ye on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand against the wiles of the devil, and having done all, to stand. And of course, that is the important thing that Christians prepare themselves to do, and you do that, of course, by taking on the sword of the Spirit and certainly knowing the Word of God, but also being able to apply it to the signs of the times. And, you know, at one point Jesus talks to the Pharisees and says, you know, there's certain things you know. I mean, you look at the sky and you can tell, you know, what it's going to be. It's going to be a good day. It's going to be a bad day. Why can't you see the signs of the times today? And of course, he's saying this to the Pharisees. Can't you understand who I am and what's going on? And the Pharisees were totally blind. And I've got a feeling that the modern-day Pharisees are totally blind of the signs of the times, you know, this moving towards this terrible conflict in the Middle East. Everybody thinks it's going to be, oh, just a simple little war, and I hope and pray that it is. But we're talking about the potential of our boys getting into a terrible, terrible situation. And, of course, you know, I can see retaliation here at home from the Muslims of the world who now are convinced that Osama bin Laden is absolutely right, that America is really interested in taking over the Islamic countries, wants its oil, and is quite willing to spill the blood of Arabs and Muslims to get it, and that America really is the great Satan that Osama bin Laden has been calling us And of course, we're doing everything, the Bush administration is doing everything, I believe, that to confirm what Osama bin Laden has been preaching for some time. And believe me, you know, when you're a country that right now, of course, is facing real economic problems with a skyrocketing price of oil and shortages of natural gas and all of the economic problems we are facing as the American dollar becomes weaker and weaker, we certainly don't need any more enemies. I would think we would need all the friends we can get. But the average individual is totally oblivious to this. He thinks everything's just fine, hunky-dory, that nothing bad is ever going to happen to America. And I would say, why wouldn't bad things happen to America? Why should God bless this country that has turned its back on him?
Yes, I thought Billy Graham's daughter was interviewed by Bryant Gumbel in the aftermath of September 11th, and I thought her answer was so good when Gumbel asked, why didn't God stop September 11th or do something about it? And she answered him that for years we've told God that we don't want him in our schools, we don't want him in our government, we don't want him in our finances. And in her words, God is being a perfect gentleman and doing just what we asked him to do. We need to make up our mind as a nation. Do we want God or don't we want him? We can't just ask him in when disaster strikes. And Mrs. Billy Graham, her mother apparently is quoted as having said, God will have to say he's sorry to Sodom and Gomorrah if indeed there isn't judgment on America because of the way many of her citizens have gone in darkness.
I agree with that totally. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guest this evening is Deborah Ray. Her book is the ABCs of Globalism. And of course, her website is www.deborahraybooks.com. And I'm looking forward to seeing Deborah's next book. I hope it's as good as her last one, which we think is an excellent source of information. And it's something that just has so much information crammed into a short space and so easy to access. And that's why I love the idea that it's all alphabetically laid out there. And all you need to do is turn to, if you're looking for something on the Lucius Trust, why, you just look under L and it's right there. So, and of course, there are all of these organizations that are working towards globalism. What's this Lucius Trust that you we talk about? You know, the average individual, and I, you know, a few years ago, I'd never even heard of the Lucius Trust. I'd been studying these movements for 30 years, and I'd never heard of the Lucius Trust. Certainly, most of the conservative organizations out there and the patriotic organizations never talk about the real struggle or never talk about the real organizations that are really working behind the scenes, movers and shakers. What is this Lucius Trust?
Well, first of all, Lucius Trust, we do have to realize, has been a key player at recent United Nations summits, and it's a New York-based group dedicated to promoting the works of Alice Bailey. And Alice Bailey is an occultist, a theosophist, a comasonic hierarch, and she established Lucius Trust with her husband Foster, who also was a 33rd degree Mason.
That was Foster Bailey, right?
Yeah, Foster Bailey, in 1922. And
What was it before it was the Lucius Trust?
Lucifer Trust, formerly Lucifer Trust.
It was the Lucifer Trust, but Lucifer's got sort of a bad name. Some of these crazy Christians think that Lucifer is a bad guy and has a bad connotation, so they wanted to be more acceptable.
Yes, and key members of the United Nations and Council on Foreign Relations are very much influenced by Lucius Trust, and among the members are Robert McNamara, Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller, and Robert Mueller, who is responsible for many of the restructuring of education in America today, the tenets and movement.
All right, of course, that certainly I believe that comes from, does that come from Gary Kaw's book, En Route to Global Occupation, or what's the documentation on that?
Yes, that he documents that concept very well.
All right, fine. And so here are some of the key players that are part of this organization, but we shouldn't be surprised about that at all. Certainly, we have a copy of West Magazine we offer. West Magazine was talking about Marie Strong. And Marie Strong has an enclave in Colorado, a couple of 100,000 acres called La Vaca Grande, and it is the center. I don't know how many of you ever read Frank Peretti's book. He had a couple of books, Into the Darkness, Out of the Darkness. I forgot the exact names of them, but I remember the second in this two-set series ended up with the hero racing towards Colorado, towards this enclave where, of course, all these people were meeting. And, of course, when he gets there, this is a center of the occult movement in the America, you know, with all these occultists and witches and there. Well, that is actually what a takeoff on La Vaca Grande, put together by Marie Strong. His wife, Maurice's wife, is a witch, and she would, of course, pray the sun up every morning. And Satanists and witch doctors and yogas and people from the New Age and would all come here. And, of course, it was commented, of course, that regular guests at the La Vaca Grande were people like Henry Kissinger and Robert McNamara. So, you know, since it's sort of goes along with this whole basic theme. Of course, war is certainly a wonderful means of satanic sacrifice, and it was Robert McNamara who sent our boys to Vietnam to fight and bleed and suffer and die, but never be allowed to win. But, of course, the purpose of Vietnam was simply to create this one world government. That's what it was really all about. And all of the wars have fought to bring about this world government, and I believe that the coming war, the purpose is not Saddam Hussein. The purpose, of course, is to be another rung in the ladder as we climb our way towards this one world government, towards globalism.
Chaos is very much a part of bringing the New World Order to pass, because out of chaos comes order, and the New World Order is what those who are instigating these wars is what they are looking to.
And that's exactly it. And, of course, the only way they're going to get the American people to go for it is going to be the total collapse of our society, the tremendous death and destruction, and people will finally give up and say, gee, we better just have this one world government. But there's already a leader who's waiting in the wings. And who is that leader?
That would be Antichrist. And Antichrist is not unveiled as of yet, but we know from the scripture that he's the latter-day visionary destined to be the most powerful dictator the world has ever known. And Antichrist will oppose Christ at the same time he pretends to be Christ. And as I understand it, he will come on the scene with answers to the world's problems and be a very charismatic character, and people will be so willing to give up their personal freedoms and to have the answers to the great chaos of the day that he will certainly, you know, have impact on the whole of the world.
And I think that people have to realize that this is not simply, you know, an X-Files type of concept. This is biblical background, and if you study the scriptures and the great writers of the past who've written about the times we're living in, they talk about this world ruler who will come as the Antichrist. And what most people don't understand is just as within Christianity, there's the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost. So within the satanic realm, there is a mirror image, and that is, of course, Satan, the Antichrist, and the false prophet. And there's a Trinity, and then there is an unholy Trinity. And, of course, everything about Satanism is the mirror image of the biblical story. Well, of course, the more you study about these things, the more you realize it's absolutely true. A lot of people sort of say, well, you know, these are all fables. No, they're not fables. This is what's happening today. This is the reality of what's happening. And, of course, at least hopefully our listeners will realize that. And I hope that this knowledge will draw them closer to the Lord. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't be involved. It doesn't mean we shouldn't be doing everything we can. About what's taking place, can we change it? I don't think so, but I think we have to try. I think we have to do everything we can to awaken people to what's going on. And the best thing we can do, of course, is bring them into a personal relationship with our Lord. And if we've done that, then perhaps when we stand before the gates of heaven, we'll hear those wonderful words. Well done, good and faithful servant. I would hate to say, hear those other words, and that is, I never knew you. And the fellow, the response was, but look at all the miracles we did, and we prophesied, and we did all these wonderful things in your name. And those terrible words, I never knew you. Well, Debbie, we're just about out of time. What message would you like to leave with our listeners tonight?
Well, I'd like to say that though the enemy shall come in like a flood, the Spirit of Yahweh shall lift up a standard against him and put him to flight. And I think that we need to know that one day every secret thing will be brought to judgment, and there is no reward to the evil man, and the candle of the wicked shall be put out.
Well said. God bless you. Thank you so very much. It's always a pleasure having you with us.
I enjoyed it very much. Thank you, Dr. Shane.
Good night. God bless you.
Good night.
Okay, that was Deborah Ray, and I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to know any more about her book, ABCs of Globalism, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then we hope that many of you listening to our program will want to, of course, join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day, trying to get people to understand what's going on, not only from a political and a geopolitical and a historical, but from a spiritual point of view. And of course, we talk about these things because we need to have our listeners understand. And once they do, of course, everything begins to make sense. Otherwise, if you're trying to make sense out of what's going on today, it's only organized insanity. So if you'd like to become a member of the Radio Liberty family, we'd love to hear from you. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, and of course our October newsletter, Ms. Kristen Breitweiser's testimony before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, telling you what really happened, or raising many questions about what really happened on September 11th, that watershed incident that has led us first into a war with Afghanistan and now into a war with Iraq, and may very well be a prelude to a World War III and the destruction of America and our way of life as we've known it. And then, of course, we hope many of you will go to our website, radioliberty.com, and we want you to tell other people about our programs, and they get our newsletters, and if you can't subscribe to them, then get them off the Internet and copy them and hand them out to others, and try to get them to understand, try to get them thinking, get them going to our website as well, but where they can actually hear our programs 5 hours a day, and of course they won't get anything accomplished if they do. But at least, of course, they'll begin to get an education. Maybe just listen to a couple of hours during the course of the day. Our programs, our evening programs and our afternoon program are recorded there and archived there. Other programs are heard on the American Freedom Network and the Genesis Network. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders, and we ask you to pray for revival, because the American people don't turn back to God. God is certainly going to turn his back on America. We ask you to pray for our men who will soon, I believe, be going into battle. We ask you to pray for the citizens of Israel and for the citizens of Palestine and the citizens of Iraq, because they're 10% of the population are Christian. And remember, even every Muslim is made in the image and likeness of God. And we're certainly not going to reach them for our Lord if we take on the violent rhetoric. And, of course, there's hope for everybody out there, and we have to be the light of the world. That's our job. And so until, well, tomorrow at the same time, I guess it'll be Monday when we'll be back with you, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And till Monday, Dr. Stan, goodbye. May the Lord be with you. Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us our good friend, Joel Skousen. Hi, Joel. How are you?
Just fine, Dr. Stan. Nice to be with you again.
Well, it's good to be with you. Now, this is an entirely different audience, so I don't hesitate to repeat some of the things we talked about earlier on our program today. And so I'll just let you pick up the story and tell us what you think about the things that are going on. And do you want to talk about why Congress has not declared war?
Yes, that is the subject, the main issue in today's World Affairs Brief that just came out. And what prompted this was one of the apologists for President Bush, Mary Mostart, a very fine person, but typically one of those conservatives who believes in anything the Republicans happen to be doing must be the right thing. She gave an extensive justification of not going or not getting a declaration of war in one of her articles in BannerOfLiberty.com. And, you know, she points out historically something that is correct, but I think draws the incorrect analysis from it. She says, you know, that the nation has only declared war five times, and most of the armed responses have been non-declarations of war. So she's trying to say, basically, this is not unusual. But in fact, it is unusual because there's a distinct difference between now versus the other historical examples, such as President Washington sending in the troops to put down the Whiskey Rebellion, or Jefferson sending the U.S. Navy to battle Barbary pirates. What was the problem in the early days was that it was no clear definition of what constitutes, you know, a full-scale war. Certainly, they realized that when you had an immediate threat, such as the Whiskey Rebellion coming out, you didn't have time for Congress to assemble and debate and decide to declare war, and there wasn't any particular nation that you declare war on. These were simply uprisings within your own people. So they developed in constitutional law over the time some basic criteria for when it was appropriate for the commander-in-chief to respond defensively in something that was an immediate, where an immediate response was necessary, and there was no clearly definable enemy yet. Then it's appropriate, of course, to act in a police action, a defensive action, without a declaration of war. But once you decide and you find out who the enemy is, and let's look at, you know, President Bush says, you know, we're declaring war on terrorism. Well, there's an undefined enemy, and so Mary Mostart says, therefore, that qualifies as not needing a declaration of war. But then when you decide, well, we're going to attack a nation called Afghanistan that we believe is sponsoring or harboring terrorism, then you've got a clearly defined nation, you've got a clearly defined enemy, right? And if you're going to go to war, you need to debate that and come fully before Congress. They did not do that. In Iraq, you have a clearly defined enemy, though it's not clear that this is an enemy directly of the United States. This is a person who's done bad things to his own people. He's done bad things to Iran, and Iran did bad things to Iraq. This happens all the time in history. You have internecine warfare. You have internation warfare. This has not led to a declaration of war. Generally speaking, the principle in the United States is you don't declare war against a country unless you're attacked. And there simply isn't, you know, he's tried to make some linkage to terrorism. It has been extremely weak, in fact, outright falsified, according to many analysts, such as myself, because of the fact that, you know, even the the smoking gun tape of Osama bin Laden calling on the Iraqi people to rise up against the United States, calls Saddam Hussein an apostate. He says it doesn't matter whether he stays or goes, this is an attack upon the Iraqi people. So he isn't, in fact, establishing a link with Saddam Hussein as a benefactor of terrorism. In fact, it's interesting that this week in CBS News, one of the reporters has been interviewing weapons inspectors and has found that almost uniformly they have a high level of disgust and disregard for U.S. tips about where to find weapons of mass destruction. In other words, they have found that almost every tip that comes from the United States is worthless, sends them on wild goose chases, doesn't turn out to be weapons of mass destruction. This says a lot for the problems with the evidence that Powell suggested out of satellite photos. I pointed that out in the World Affairs Brief of that week, that these satellite photos did not, in fact, show what he indicated them to. These were highly interpretive photos. And I said, if they were accurate, I made this point. I said, if they were accurate, why didn't they call down to the inspectors and have them check it out? And in fact, on a couple of cases, we now find out that they did. And they didn't turn out to be what Powell said they were. And the inspectors, in fact, and this has not been brought up by the U.S. press until the CBS News report, which was not picked up by any of the other state stations. But it shows that, in fact, the weapons inspectors don't have any respect for the American intelligence. Now, I'm sure that there are some violations occurring. Saddam is a very bad man. But there is an ulterior motive for this war, and it all stacks up and provides a reason for why neither Bush nor Congress want a declaration of war.
All right. Well, I certainly am very, very concerned about the coming war, and I think that every person in our listening audience would be, because this is the first time we've ever justified a war, a preemptive war, because somebody may at some time in the future want to attack us. Well, of course, there are a lot of people in the world who might want to attack us, but we can't attack everybody who might want to do anything, might, not will, but might want to do something in the future. And this is a very, very dangerous precedent. Could somebody else justify attacking the United States because we might attack them in the future? I mean, this faulty line of reasoning, and yet there's no outcry from Congress. In fact, newsletter will deal with a speech by Senator Robert Byrd, and even though I disagree with Senator Byrd on many issues, I agree with his concern about the coming war. And as he points out in the speech, the Senate refuses to debate this issue. And as he said, you know, we are at the edge, you know, one of the greatest events in our nation's history. And listen to the debate in the Senate. There is no debate. He said the rafters should ring. Every senator should be sitting in his seat. The press gallery should be full. And, of course, none of this is happening. The Senate refuses to address this event, which, of course, could change the course of our nation, indeed, change the course of history. And I think we have to ask ourselves, why is there no debate there? There may be a little debate in the newspaper, but as far as I'm concerned, the debate in the newspaper gives you all the wrong reasons, a lot of justification, but never the real reason for the war. But neither the Senate nor the House of Representatives is really debating this grievous issue, this issue that could transform America forever.
Well, I want to go back to a point you made about preemptive strikes. There is, in fact, a very legitimate reason for preemptive strikes, and that reason is when there is imminent threat to your nation. Now, there's only one or two nations that are imminently threatening to the United States, and they are Russia and China. They both have secret weapon systems, massive weapons of mass destruction. Every defector has said the target is the United States. They're intending to strike. If there ever was a justification for preemptively striking an enemy before they strike us, it is with Russia and China. But what do? We have aid and trade to both nations. We cover for their weapons preparations. We fail to tell, I'm speaking of the administration, fails to tell the American public about Yamato Mountain, where you have a huge underground complex of weapons factories, and of which U.S. inspectors are not allowed. We continue to parade before the world that Russia is in full compliance with all the treaties when they are in open defiance of the treaties. They even renounced no more than 6 months after Bush met with Putin in Russia to sign this great disarmament treaty, they renounced their portion of it. This was what Fed justified taking out our MX missiles. Is the U.S. now reneging and stopping the destruction of our MX missiles? Not at all. I mean, something's very wrong with this picture. When you tell the American people Iraq is a real threat to the United States and you cover for Russia, who has thousands and thousands of missiles and weapons of mass destruction aimed at us, China, who now has nuclear submarines that can take out clear to the Midwest, and it has long-range intercontinental ballistic missiles. It has the SS-27 shipped to it by Russia, which is the Topol-M, of which is so feared in the Russian arsenal. Are we preparing a weapon, anti-ballistic missile system for Russia or China? Not at all, supposedly for a few rogue nations. So I'm not buying this fact that we're using a preemptive strike because this is a nation that is imminently threatening the United States. It is not. Now let's look at the aspect of whether or not terrorism is imminently threatening to the United States. There's certainly no direct link of any substance has been proven between Saddam Hussein and Iraq. Now, I have no doubt that he would like to do something, but the main problem is this. The vaunted Al-Qaeda seems to be more, as many people suspect, a controlled aspect of terrorism, perhaps even controlled by the CIA, because if Al-Qaeda was a legitimate terrorist organization and had hundreds, if not thousands, of cells in the United States, why hasn't there been any attacks since 9/11? This is not an imminent threat. They're not on the run. Even if the, you know, as you pointed out, the 1,000-plus-odd Arabs that were rounded up, which we happen to know from many of the people who knew those Arabs, that these were just students and other people that the U.S. has put into incarceration, but, you know, the U.S. has not had any evidence. If they'd been tracking them, they'd have abundant evidence to show that these were terrorists. But, in fact, you could have, in the time that we've spent discussing and debating and passing laws like Patriot Act and Homeland Security, you could have shipped in another 10,000 terrorists. The point is there's been no terrorist attack since 9/11. And we're not even sure that 9/11 was an independent attack because of all of the evidence that there is that the government itself knew about the presence of these people in the United States, facilitated their being there, gave them visas, did not launch aircraft to impede these attacks, have withheld dozens of pieces of crucial information that would shed light on these attacks, including the recordings between the pilots as the aircraft were being hijacked and taken over, and the FAA. Why wouldn't they tell us what the pilots were saying if, in fact, this was a legitimate attack? You know, just so much evidence that we don't have time to go into today. But it appears to me that we have agent provocateurs working among us, we have controlled terrorism, and we have a war that has been prompted for ulterior motives and is being carried forth under the name of weapons of mass destruction. And it has to be, in my opinion, Stan, the major reason that the United States does not declare war, that Bush has not asked for a declaration of war, is that were we to declare war, the UN would be irrelevant to that declaration. Once a nation declares war, the military goes to war against that nation. And there's no need then to go parading before the United Nations and carrying on as if we have an obligation to this multinational organization that in fact is hostile to peace, is hostile to U.S. interests, and which has as its ultimate purpose, I think, getting us into a global government.
All right, fine. Well, I certainly find no problems at all with that. I think that everybody should ask why we have not asked for a declaration of war and why the administration is so intent upon going into this battle. And, of course, if you listen to what's being said, if you read what's being said now, Bush talks about what we're going to do afterwards, probably have several hundred thousand American troops permanently stationed in Iraq. And of course, as you know, we're beginning to pull off our troops out of Europe increasingly so. And of course, Paul Wolfowitz today was quoted as saying, oh no, it's not going to be a couple of hundred thousand American troops. There's probably only going to be about 100,000 American troops. permanently stationed in Iraq. What does that suggest to you? Well, it suggests exactly what they were talking about in the Rebuilding America's Defenses report put out by the Project for a New American Century, and that was that we were going to have our troops permanently stationed in Central Asia. And, of course, it didn't matter about whether Saddam Hussein was there or not. The major thing was we were going to have our troops stationed there and throughout the world like the cavalry on the old frontier. And those of you who haven't read the Rebuilding America's Defenses or who actually put this together, it's on the New American Century Report, newamericancentury.org up on the web, and it is really a very, very revealing report. Have you seen that, Joel? Do you know that?
Yes, I certainly have, and I think there is some disinformation involved in it. In other words, I don't think it accurately reflects the globalist scenario. It talks about the U.S. being the predominant force, rearranging the world for democracy and all those fine things. That is not, in fact, what they plan on doing. It is, I think, a masterful piece of disinformation to once again build an image of the U.S. as the bully trying to boss the rest of the world around and save the world and tell the world what to do. That is not what they're intending. They're intending to create that image so as to justify the eventual attack on the United States by Russia and China so that the U.S. can be taken down as the policeman of the world. And then the world in fear and abject horror at the threat of a new nuclear war, which they'll be faced with against Russia and China, will be forced into the hands of the United Nations to save the world. Now, that, I think, is what they're planning, and I think that is a partial piece of disinformation there.
Well, whether it is or not, certainly this is what they're putting out for the time being. And, of course, they're creating this impression that America is going to dominate the world. And, of course, whether it's America or whether it's the United Nations, it'll really be basically the same people in charge. At least I think our leaders want to be in charge. I think that the communist leaders want to be in charge. I think that the Chinese want to be in charge. I think everybody really wants to be in charge of this coming world order. There's no question there's going to be a coming world order. The only question is who's going to be in charge, and I think that they're all wrong. I think that none of them are going to be in charge of it, but I think they're all in for a big surprise.
Well, my take on this, though, Stan, is that the only difference I have in that opinion is that part of that who's in charge is they must unseat Americans from their sovereignty. You see, as long as the U.S. is running around the world, fixing things, playing policeman of the world, the United States people still think they have sovereignty. They intend to unhorse that sovereignty from America. So the only way to do that is to destroy America militarily, to induce a third world war strike against the United States. It will be so shocking to the United States because they believe they're invincible. They believe their military is invincible, but it's not. It is extremely susceptible, 100% susceptible, to a Russian preemptive nuclear missile strike. Now, people have been told time and time again that the Russians are flat on the back, they can't do this. In fact, that is pure disinformation. The Russians are preparing as we speak for that strike. They're waiting for the propitious moment. They're feigning weakness, keeping their conventional military strength hidden and the number of manpower down to a third of what they normally have, but they keep their officer corps and the NCO high, meaning that they can fill those ranks with new recruits rapidly while the world is trying to recover from this preemptive nuclear strike. It's a masterful strategy, and the U.S. is appearing to fall into it. But it's my philosophy and my theory that the U.S. is purposely appearing to disarm, whereas in fact they're trying to induce the Russians to strike through building this caricature worldwide of the U.S. as the bully of the world, so that eventually at some trigger event, and it might be this war in Iraq, it might be a follow-on war in the Middle East, it might be North Korea finally getting the go-ahead from China to attack South Korea, and Taiwan, those could all be trigger events that could force the United States to use some tactical nuclear weapons that would open Pandora's box, and Russia could say, somebody has to stop this tyrant, the United States, from working its will around the world, and that's why we nuked it. But you see, the key purpose here is the United States people think they have sovereignty, but if they're destroyed militarily, their leaders can come out of their bunkers and say, oh, the Russians deceived us. We didn't know they had all these weapons. We didn't know that they were preparing this. We all now have to go to war under the United Nations, the only thing that can save us to beat this great tyrant, this new communist tyranny. And I think that's what they've got planned.
Well, you may very well be right. The most significant thing is, of course, that our leaders have intentionally left America defenseless in the face of certainly a tremendous Soviet threat. And, of course, this idea of mutual assured destruction, of course, really is not mutual assured destruction. It's just assured destruction because, of course, the Soviets have an anti-ballistic missile system, not simply just around Moscow, as they were allowed to under the SALT agreements, but certainly that covers most of the continental and most of their property. They have certainly a multi-tiered system of protection for themselves. At the same time, our leaders have intentionally left us defenseless. And then George Bush has come up and said, I'm going to build an anti-ballistic missile system. And everybody says, oh boy, you know, it's great to have a great patriot in there. And what's he building? It sounds like he's going to build a system that might take out 20 missiles. Now, the Soviets have right now, I think, 7,000 missiles. We are unilaterally disarming. They're in full production for war. Our leaders are not stupid, and this is the thing that gives credence to your argument. I believe that we can say many things about our leaders, but never accuse them of stupidity. They know exactly what they're doing. Everything is calculated, and they're intentionally leaving America open to a crushing military attack, which could kill literally tens of millions of Americans. And when that would happen, why, of course, the American people would simply, anything. They would be like the people of Europe were after the First World War and after the Second World War. Anything. We have to restore order. We will just want peace. We don't want to have to live in constant fear. I mean, you know, the people of Afghanistan, the people of Iraq have lived in constant fear. They've never known peace and security. Here in America, you know, why the people almost fell apart, after the 9/11 attack. And yet, of course, you can imagine what would happen with something like that happening to America. I don't think the American people, at least many of them, really have the intestinal fortitude. I think that they would simply crack under the strain.
Well, certainly Americans are not prepared for any of the tough things that are headed our way, and that's why it's going to be a tremendous shock. I mean, the mother of all terrorism is, in fact, the nuclear preemptive strike by the continuing Soviets, as Christopher Story calls them. He believes, as I do, that they never did. There never was a fall of communism. It was a carefully crafted deception. Eric Honecker said as much. He said he was told by Moscow to step down and to allow the demonstrations to go forth in Leipzig. Ceausescu said he was told to step down. He refused, and he was taken out by force. This was a carefully crafted deception, and the Western press went right along with it as well. So I think that is our major threat. I think that the main purpose of everything since Bosnia and Kosovo, which for the first time the NATO went on the offensive, intervening in other countries without a defensive justification, where they provoked those Serbian atrocities. They provoked through the KLA hoodlums that they trained in Albania. They at gunpoint forced their own Albanian people to hit the road and become refugees so that it could be blamed on the Serbs. All this was done with CIA knowledge and control. And so these have been done to alienate the Slavic people, and the current war in Afghanistan and Iraq is done to alienate the Islamic people, two of the largest bases that form the support group behind Russia and China. And they must have that hatred in that base to feel justified to their own people to throw a nuclear preemptive strike at the United States. And the U.S. is handing it to them on a silver platter.
Well, I think that to many people, this probably seems pretty stupid. I mean, why would our leaders do that? And I can only say that I believe that behind everything are these spirits of forces that energize our leaders, many of whom, of course, have allegiance not to America, but to another, to a globalist dream, and also, of course, to the spirits of forces which energize that globalist dream. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a question, a comment, if you agree, if you disagree, maybe you think that the coming war is going to be a piece of cake. Boy, we've really got to get in there and get rid of that wicked Saddam Hussein and everything's going to be fine. And, you know, I hear some of the people talking this way, and I just wonder if they really understand the implications of going to war and sending 200,000 of our boys to war over in the Middle East. In fact, I was reading something tonight, and I don't know if it's really true, that apparently Colonel Hackworth commented that we were planning, if we lost an awful lot of boys, not to bring them home for burial, but to just bury them in trenches over there. Had you heard that? Is there any truth to that story? Is that simply being put out if it's information?
No, actually that was in reference to casualties on the Iraqi side.
Okay, fine. That was Iraqis, not Americans.
Right. They have never said that about American boys. And what they have done in the past in Bosnia and Kosovo and even Afghanistan, they've hidden the losses that we've had. They've shipped people home secretly who were dead, and as they did in out of Kosovo, they shipped them out through Greece and told the families, of course, never told the numbers, the correct numbers, to the press. Now, there weren't a lot more, but instead of, you know, 20 or 25, I guess, was the official loss in Kosovo, it ended up being about 200. And so there have been more than what the United States
admitted. Well, Chris, you know, this whole thing of the Muslims certainly in Bosnia, the Muslim forces in Kosovo, both of them were backed by Osama bin Laden and by Al-Qaeda. And yet, of course, the American government was backing them as well. Why would we be backing the people that Osama bin Laden is backing, unless nothing is as it really appears to be? Everything, of course, is illusion. Let's go to Mike calling in here from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Hi, Stan. I want to say I really enjoy Mr. Skousen every time you have him on.
Well, that's why I have him on, because I want, I know that you enjoy him. Mm. I do, too.
Okay. Well, okay, as long as there's the two of us. But back to your question, why we have not asked for a declaration of war from Congress, I believe is what you're referring to.
Right.
I have a different theory.
All right, Ryan. We'll be glad to have you here. Your theory?
I think the executive branch, whether it's Bush or whoever, is not interested anymore in asking Congress for such declarations. I think the executive branch wants to do it on its own. And beyond that, I believe they want to transfer that power to NATO and the UN. You mentioned, somebody mentioned a minute ago, Kosovo. And if we think back to what Clinton did, there was no declaration, involvement of Congress there, except for they, you know, screamed and, ran their fingers through their hair trying to figure out what to do. Clinton did that for as long as he could and beyond, and what I'm speaking of is some legal gymnastic where the president apparently is allowed to do such a thing as he did for 60-some days, and I believe he went 5 or 6 days even beyond that. And I hear the music. Do you need to do something?
Well, we're going to go to a break. You got about 20 seconds.
Well, pretty well said it. I think that Bush really doesn't want to go to Congress. He wants to go the other direction, the globalist direction, and bypass whatever legitimate powers there are given to the executive branch.
All right, fine. Well, thanks so very much, Mike.
Okay.
And bye-bye. We'll be back in just a moment with our special guest, Joel Skousen. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this evening is Joel Skousen, and Joel publishes World Affairs Brief. And Joel, let's go ahead and tell our listeners about World Affairs Brief and how they can get in touch with you and get in touch with your website and get in touch with your organization that so they can get a copy of World Affairs Brief.
World Affairs Brief is a weekly news analysis service and private intelligence service that I put out. There is a modest subscription fee. It's very cheap by internet. You can find out about that on my website, which is joelskousen.com, J-O-E-L-S-K-O-U-S-E-N, joelskousen.com. Now, if they don't have access to the internet, they can call my office number during the week, area code 801-224-4746. And there's a print edition of the World Affairs Brief that comes out at the end of each month, four or five briefs depending on how many weeks in a month, and you can get samples of that simply by calling my office and requesting free samples. I'd be happy to send them out to you.
But of course, I prefer getting it by email because I get a chance to read them every week, and they're always fascinating. And Joel has a little different twist, sort of an O. Henry twist on so many things, and yet it's very provocative and very thought-provoking, and I can certainly recommend it to you. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295, and we've been talking about why the president doesn't want to declare war, hasn't asked Congress to declare war, but even more striking to me is why doesn't Congress object? I mean, it almost appears as if Congress has simply relinquished the power that it has. At one time, the executive branch of government was simply to execute the positions taken by Congress, and the real power was in Congress. And then, of course, we saw the judiciary saying, well, we have the right to say whether, you know, your legislation is constitutional or not. And Marbury versus Madison, and that concept was established that the Supreme Court certainly could restrict the power of the legislature. But now, of course, it seems that the legislature has simply relinquished control over the war-making capacity to the President of the United States. In fact, you know, of course, they're supposed to appropriate all the money, but the President always seems to be able to get money from other sources whenever he wants to do anything. We're spending money like it's going out of style. I think it was just a few months ago that they increased the national debt almost a half a trillion dollars. I think it was $450 billion. And that's almost all spent. Now they're going to have to go back again. And in 9 months to put out $450 billion, you know, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. We have never had, I think, as big a spender as we have in the White House today. We have massive international debts. We have massive national debts. Our balance of trade is completely out of whack. Our economy is sinking. Our dollar is falling. And now we're going to war? What insanity is this? And where is Congress that is supposed to be protecting the certainly the interests of the American people?
Well, I do agree with your caller, Mike. The president's objective, of course, is a globalist objective. That's why he wants the ability to rattle the cages of the world with presidential powers alone. But the reason he doesn't go to Congress is not because he can't get the votes. The point is, Congress is a rubber stamp right now. He could easily get the votes for a declaration of independence, I mean a declaration of war. But we know that Congress doesn't even want the president to ask for a declaration of war. That was the surprising thing when Ron Paul threw that curveball to Congress and he says, I move that we consider a declaration of war against Iraq. Now, Ron Paul's against the war in Iraq. But he wanted to make Congress do its constitutional duty, and they refused. Henry Hyde made disparaging statements about the Constitution. Here's a leader in Congress that's sworn to uphold, as all congressmen are, even every military person sworn to uphold the Constitution. And Henry Hyde, if I can quote from him, he said, the Constitution or the Declaration of War is anachronistic. It isn't done anymore, says who? as Congress. In other words, we don't want to do that. He says it's been the Constitution has been overtaken by events, by time. It's no longer relevant to a modern society.
And so when did Henry Hyde have the right to declare the Constitution, which is the foundation of our freedom and our society, outdated by the events of time? Events have not changed the nature of man. And, of course, the Constitution was created recognizing that you could never trust men with power. And the whole idea was to prevent from happening exactly what's happening here with an all-power executive branch of government similar to that exists in any tyrannical form of government, whether it be Hitler's Germany, Benito Mussolini's Italy, or George Bush's Washington, D.C.
Now, there is evidence here that Congress has conspired with the president to undo American sovereignty and to deny the Constitution. Because when Ron Paul went to get written documentation of these statements after the committee meeting was over, C-SPAN, which is a private corporation, said they had technical difficulties and weren't able to record that portion.
But everything else in the meetings they did record, just
that's right. He went to the Congressional Service, which records everything. These are subject to public open meeting laws. They must, by law, record these things. Somebody had made a telephone call and had twisted arms and had obstructed justice, had destroyed evidence, because even the Congressional Service says they didn't have a recording of Hyde and Tom Lantos, who called his call for a declaration of war frivolous and mischievous. Well, it wasn't certainly frivolous. It was a little mischief in Ron Paul, because he was, of course, wanted Congress to squirm it out. And sure enough, he found a hornet's nest in there, that Congress itself is in collusion with the president to establish a global hegemony over the world and to deny American sovereignty. And that's why they don't want to declare war. They want to make sure the U.S. has to go to the U.N. They keep pushing this U.N. And look at the speech that he gave on Wednesday. Every other word halfway through the speech was about force, the United States having force, the U.S. using force. He quoted Winston Churchill saying, "We have to have a United Nations to make sure that the force of right will and the ultimate issue be protected by the right of force." The right of force, he was talking about in the UN. And of course, prior to these years, all the leaders in the world downplayed the use of force in the United Nations to make sure people didn't feel that their nation's sovereignty was threatened. Now we're moving into the final stage of UN empowerment, where the UN is to have force, and I don't think it will ultimately happen. Remember, it's not happening today. The U.S. is providing the force, and that will change, if my theory is correct, when the U.S. succeeds in engendering a massive response, an attack on the U.S., which will take out our military. Then you'll see the world say, we must put force now with the U.N. This is what sovereignty has wrought, another third world. We have another Hitler in the form of Putin, whoever's going to be in charge of the Soviet Union at that time. And the world will rise up again in a third world patriotic war, and people will stupidly go to war again thinking that they're serving God, country, and going to reestablish American sovereignty. And I tell you, it will never be reestablished again. Once we go into this next war under UN empowerment, with UN forces, we will never have our sovereignty again.
And I think this is what the American people have to understand, is the real goal is the New World Order, the New World Religion. And, of course, this was what Alice Beattie called it for in her writings. This is what George Herbert Walker Bush called for in his statement beginning on September 11th, the year 2000, when he talked about the New World Order, and, of course, making the United Nations work as it was originally intended to be, intended to work. And, of course, remember his speech, I think it was one of his inaugural speeches, where he talked about this 1,000 points of light. That came right about out of Alice Beattie. And Alice Beattie was a Luciferian, and I think people have to understand either George Bush was reading a script written by a speechwriter who was a Luciferian, or he knew exactly what was in those speeches. But, of course, we find George Herbert Walker Bush repeatedly talking dozens of times about the importance of a new world order. And of course, this is apparent. This is exactly what his son is pushing. Everybody says, "Oh well, he's cut from a different bolt of cloth." No, I think he's cut from exactly the same bolt of cloth. I think the same people backed him that backed his father, and I think their objective is this New World Order, the New World Religion, and the destruction of American sovereignty. And this is what it's really all about, and doing away with national borders and creating this one world utopia. But behind that are these spiritual forces which energize everything, and until people talk about that, and they don't want to talk about it, all we want to talk about is, you know, how bad Saddam is, and that's why we've got to go to war. And that Saddam has nothing, is really only a marginal issue. Saddam is the justification, but not the real reason for the attack.
Well, and that's, of course, why I'm against the war. I'm not against, if you have a true threat against national security, of going and preemptively striking and taking care of that threat. I don't think that is justified in this case. In fact, I think I know otherwise that the very reasons he is focusing on weapons of mass destruction is not the reason he's going into Iraq. But in any case, you know, the president is trying to build the appearance of a coalition. It was very telling. I watched Jim Lehrer NewsHour just because it is the premier government point of view put before the American people. And, of course, he talked about the open admission that the Security Council members are busy horse trading with the U.S., trying to see what kind of benefits they can get. You know, Turkey's trying to get $26 billion and negotiating for more. Colombia wants more helicopters and more troops in there. Chile wants a trade agreement, a beneficial trade agreement. And Mexico, of course, has gotten a promise from the Bush administration for all kinds of immigration goodies, the ones that we've been talking about, increased immigration quotas for Mexicans, and no more prosecution, Social Security benefits for them, as well as another amnesty. And this, of course, was not all of that was talked about openly on McNeil Lehrer or Jim Lehrer show, but it got out to the press conference, and this is a fascinating transcript I pulled off the White House site at whitehouse.gov, the news releases. They have the transcripts of the president's press conferences where Ari Fleischer, his spokesman, was speaking. And he just got grilled by the press about this bribing of countries to vote with the U.S. on this next resolution. Do we have time for me to quote from some of this, Stan?
We certainly do. You go right ahead. Fortunately, why we make up the rules on this program. Go ahead.
All right. This is very interesting to follow here. First of all, a reporter says, Ari, in Mexico, the president is continuing to call President Fox to pressure him to change his mind against the vote in the Security Council. What can Mexico get from the United States if it votes yes for the resolution that was presented? Here's Fleischer's response. Now, first of all, this entire matter will be dealt with in a manner of diplomacy and logic and expressions of our position. And nations will then be in a position as sovereign nations to evaluate that information. You notice how they keep hyping sovereignty as if sovereignty still exists, because it does. And they're assuring everybody that there's no sacrifice of sovereignty, even though at the very time they're attempting, this is a process to destroy sovereignty. This is why the Security Council set up with 10 members, and it goes on and on. The reporter interrupts him. He says, but Mexico can get something from the U.S., from the president. What is it? Fleischer says, this is a time, no, the president is not offering any quid pro quos. Now, that's an outright lie, but he's denying that there's any horse trading. Now, this is incredible. When a pro-government spokesman like Jim Lehrer talks about it openly that very day before, he says, this is a time, this is Fleischer saying, this is a time for nations to do what they estimate is the right thing to do to promote peace. Sounds good. The reporter isn't buying it. He says, Ari, just to follow up on Mexico, is it true that the administration is willing to give Mexico some sort of immigration agreements like amnesty or guest worker programs to assure the Mexican vote, as the French press is pointing out today? Fleischer. No, it's exactly as I indicated, that we have on this issue a matter of diplomacy, a matter on the merits. We ask each nation in the Security Council to weigh the merits and make a decision about war and peace. He says, if anybody thinks that there are nations like Mexico whose vote could be bought on the basis of trade issues or something else, I think you're doing a great injustice to independence and the judgment of the leaders of other nations. I mean, he's really getting out of a limb on this denial here. Now, the reporter still isn't quitting. He says, the French press is quoting two different diplomats from the United States State Department, and they are confirming that the United States is giving some sort of agreements of benefits to Mexico, to Colombia, and other non-permanent members of the Security Council. Fleischer says, well, I haven't seen that story. And you already have the answer about what this is decided on. But think about the implications of what you're saying. You're saying that the leaders of other nations are viable. So he's finally going to address the issues with these reporters. You're saying that they're viable, and that is not an acceptable position. You know, the transcript says right after that statement, it says laughter.
And of course, you know, why do we think that Turkey is going to vote, or at least is considering voting to, you know, allow American troops to go through that? Because we're going to give them somewhere $15 to $26 billion. You know, and of course, the most interesting thing about that is the parliament has to vote on it. The parliament refuses to vote, and we've got all these kids sitting in ships off the shore of Turkey waiting to go ashore, and the parliament is adjourned and put off the vote, the Turkish parliament. I don't know whether they want more money or, you know, of course, there's a lot of Islamic fundamentalists there who I'm sure hate America. You know, and but anybody who doesn't think that, who thinks that Turkey is going to let us put our men in there for any other reason than for money, of course we're buying votes all around the world with our money. I mean, that's the thing. And where is this 26 or 15 or whatever billion dollars going to come from? Why, it's going to come from increasing our national debt. There's just one more coffin in the financial, one more nail in the financial coffin of this once great country.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, Stan. It is tremendously obvious to the whole world. We've become the laughingstock. Everybody knows the U.S. has no more legitimacy anymore. They are buying everybody's allegiance. They are arm-twisting where they can't be bought. And when Ari Fleischer, this is the first time this has happened in my memory, when he makes a statement, and this is not an acceptable position, and the reporters laugh at him. He was so embarrassed when they, and this wasn't just mild laughter, this was hoots of laughter. They just burst out laughing when he says, you can't say this, this is an unacceptable position. And he stomped off the stage. That's the first time I've ever seen a presidential spokesman flat lose his cool and get laughed off the stage by the liberal press. It was just incredible.
Well, you know, at least even the liberal press has a sense of humor. Let's go to Eric calling in from Compton. Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
Fine, Doc. How about you?
Doing great. Good to hear from you. Any question or comment?
I want to make a comment, and I want you to, both you and your guest, to comment on my comment.
All right, fine. You make a comment, and then we'll get Joel to comment on it.
I'm starting to get a little confused, Dr. Stan. I've been listening to you now for about 10 years. I know you can verify and you have the documentation for everything that you say, but I listen to a lot of radio, Christian radio, conservative talk show radio, and it's like so many people are for this war.
Right.
Jay Sekulow, he used to talk about, you know, the trials that he was involved in with them coming against Christianity, but a lot of his show is like pro-war and Bush now. And, you know, I've always believed Jay Sekulow to be a good Bible-believing Jewish Christian. I still do. But he's pro-war. All the conservative talk show hosts are pro-war. James Dobson, man of God, I believe, is pro-Bush and pro-war. All these people, do they just not know? Are they deceived? I mean, it's getting a little confusing here. I understand that Matthew in the 24th chapter, Jesus talked about earthquakes and rumors of wars and rumors of wars and all these other things. He only mentioned one time, but the thing that he mentions four times, which everyone misses, it's kind of funny, is deception, that many people would be deceived. And even I know that, well, I was studying Islam before 9/11, thanks to Robert Morey, and I realized that the Arabs are not going to back us. When push comes to shove, they're not going to back us, because they believe in what they're doing. That's the bottom line. How can I know these things? And all these religious leaders don't seem to get it. I'm starting to get confused.
All right, fine. That's a very good point. Let's ask Joel. How would you respond to Eric? He's saying, look, you've got all these religious leaders. I mean, these are good people, and a lot of them really do love the Lord. And I did an interview last night with a talk show host in San Francisco who I have no question at all loves the Lord. And, of course, he is solidly in favor of the war. So how would you respond to Eric's question, Joel?
Well, there's a couple of levels. Number one is that they, on the conservative side, see the left protesting against the war, and they say, well, if the hard left is against it, it must be a good thing. That's one level. The other level is it's extremely dangerous for them in terms of keeping their audience because most of the conservative people can't see this grand deception of a conservative appearing president actually being part of a conspiracy to take down our liberty. They have not been able to see through that deception. So they're unwilling to take the risk of attacking the president, a Christian president, a so-called Christian attorney general, and that's one of the reasons. They know that they would become irrelevant, that a lot of their people would be angry and start to lose faith. And so I think that's a couple of reasons. But basically, there's another reason that it might well be that they do love the Lord, it's true, but they also love their ministry, they love the money that keeps coming through it, and they're unwilling to go down and on principle, and that's what would happen if you went against President Bush.
But of course, here on Radio Liberty, we say it as we do, and at least the people who listen to us, I think most of them agree with us. We may lose a lot of our support. I haven't seen what's going to happen this month, but we're not going to change our position or what we know to be true. Eric, let me tell you that I had an opportunity back in 1999. To meet with a group, sometimes it's referred to as a College of Cardinals, that's what Howard Philip refers to them at, about 16 or 18 religious leaders. Don't ask me what I was doing there, because I was the most unimportant person there. But these were the real movers and shakers of the Christian conservative movement. And we interviewed that day, we'd interviewed all of the Republican candidates, and we interviewed Pat Buchanan. That day we'd interviewed Pat Buchanan and George Bush. I was very impressed by Pat Buchanan. I was not in the least bit impressed by George Bush. And the amazing thing was, other than John Stormer, who was there with me, everybody else was impressed by him. I could not believe it. When he got up and he looked us all in the eye and he said, you know, it was Billy Graham that led me to the Lord, and I'm a good Christian, and I love the Lord. You know, it's very hard to say that this just isn't so. But, of course, everything I know about the family and about the skull and bones and about, of course, the fact that he says one thing, and if you look very carefully, he does just the opposite on most things, leads me to believe that he is not being completely forthright with us. Eric, there are a lot of good people out there who will disagree with us. All we can do is hope and pray that one day they'll see the truth as it really is. I remember during the Vietnam War, I supported the Vietnam War. I look back at that and I said, how could I have been so stupid? I think maybe it's because I'm a little older and Joel's a little older, and maybe we're a little wiser, and maybe God's given us the wisdom to be able to see and understand what's going on. But I really think the point you make is that there is a tremendous deception out there. I really believe that the elect, even the elect, will be deceived, and I believe the elect are being deceived today. Would you agree with that, Joel?
Yes, I'm afraid so. You know, and that's a sad commentary on the spiritual perception of people who wear their religion on the sleeve. Spiritual perception is the ability to see what isn't there sometimes, and to receive the witness of the Lord that someone is deceiving us or someone is not telling the truth. And I admit it's difficult because we're being systematically denied a great deal of information. If people knew what I knew, a lot of them would not be able to carry on as carefully with their opinions. But I also know that there's a great deal of people who read my briefs and write me back and say, you sound just like the socialists, and how come you can't support our president? And I write back and say, look at the evidence I just gave you. I mean, they've read the evidence. It's as if they didn't read anything. They never answer the issues I bring up. They never even try to justify. They just say, I believe in George Bush, and so that's that, and you must be wrong. But I ask people to answer the questions, answer the evidence I give, and tell me how that's wrong. And they can't do it.
Well, Eric, continue listening, and I believe Joel is absolutely right, and I am firmly convinced, of course, that behind everything are these spiritual forces we talk about, and until we can begin to correlate politics and the spiritual and the secret societies, which are really there, they're not imaginary, until people really have the historical foundation, they're going to be blinded and deceived. Thanks so much for calling.
Dr. Stan?
Yeah, go ahead.
Real quick, there was a movie back in 1976, Network.
Right.
There's a scene near the end when Ned Beatty calls the guy, he won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor, Peter Finch. He calls Peter Finch into the office and he reads him the riot act because he said something over the airwaves that he wasn't supposed to. Listen to that little 2 or 3, 4 minute speech. It is amazing. It is absolutely what exactly they want and where we're going. I would love to know who wrote that movie and what his motivation was.
All right.
Listen to that speech at the end. It's absolutely amazing what he said.
I think the fellow who wrote that wanted to get the truth out, and that was the best way to do it. God bless you. Good night.
Thank you, Doctor.
Bye bye. And I want to thank you so much, Joel. It's always a pleasure having you with us. I know our audience appreciates you, and I do too. God bless you. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Bye bye. Okay, well, that was Joel Scales, and hope you enjoyed the program with him, as I always do. And then, of course, we ask you to remember that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our program for your support, your financial support, for your prayers. Now I finally found the other radio station. I knew we had another radio station. Our weekend program goes to 35 stations across America. And we many times will do another hour-long program here in the Central Coast on the Saturday. But you know, we have an outreach. We have it because of people across the country who believe in what we're doing and will support us. And some people are not going to support us because we oppose the war, because we think that it's wrong. I hope that, you're not going to agree with everything we say, but I hope you'll agree with enough that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And if you'd like to, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you'd like a copy of our Radio Liberty newsletter, our latest newsletter, January tells why we're going to war, the February newsletter, is Senator Byrd's speech, and of course gets into the background of this whole program for the American Empire, the Project for a New American Century, and who is part of this and what their objectives and goals are. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. I would say that if you'd like to get a copy of our newsletter, just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. And then, lastly, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Pray for the boys who are going to be going into battle. Pray for the citizens of Israel and the citizens of Palestine, because I believe there's going to be tremendous increased violence over there. Pray for the citizens of Iraq. And, of course, pray that the war will be over quickly. And until Monday, when we'll be back with you, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Well, did you hear that they got the Emergency Health Powers Act again in California?
So what happened to it?
Well, they reintroduced it, Dr. Uh-huh. And I pulled it down.
Thank you.
Yes.
Has it been enacted or is it?
No, it's in the House Committee. And I went to see Betsy McCarty.
Who's Betsy McCarty?
She's the head of the public health in
Hanford. Okay.
And this is phase one of the smallpox.
See, the thing is, why do they want this? What is this really all about? You know, the complications from the smallpox vaccine, you know, if you look, if there really was smallpox, I mean, it would certainly be worthwhile being vaccinated. But, you know, what do they know? Why are they doing this? You know, are they trying to scare us again? Or are they planning on releasing smallpox to decimate the world's population? I mean, this would be, I hope and pray that they're not that evil, but they
Of all the diseases for them to vaccinate again.
Yeah. There are 50 different diseases that they can unleash here. So why this one? Why all this emphasis, except that we're the only ones who have the vaccine for it? Is it you got something in there that's going to hurt us? Or?
This was just in today's paper about how they're going after airline passengers.
Oh, yeah, you and I will probably be on that list.
I wonder if they're going to have different colors.
Yeah.
They're going to have green, yellow.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I might have a red. Maybe they won't let us travel.